Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Real As Yates podcast. We are your hosts, Taylor Yates
and Paige Yates.
In this podcast, we share with you everything we know about real estate, Greater Boston, and life. And in case you're wondering, yes, we are in fact related. We are a top producing mother-son real estate agent team where we lead, surprise, the Yates team.
Okay, T, tell me what you did when you were on April vacation with in Philadelphia with your in-laws.
So, you know, Philadelphia is usually a few degrees warmer than here. So we get a little bit of extra outside time. We actually kind of have like a pretty good rhythm down there now. Like we usually do a trip to like the Camden Aquarium, which is right nearby my in-law's house, which is huge. It's like, puts like the New England Aquarium to shame.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Way bigger. I can tell you a little history behind that in a sec. But, you know, go to the Camden Aquarium. They've got a pretty good science museum, like the Franklin Institute. And, you know, just like a lot of like outside time, right? It's just the kids need some fresh air after a New England winter.
Is it Winter Park? Is that what's the big outdoor flower?
Oh, yeah. So I took my son to the flower festival when he was really little.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, kind of at that age where they're just along for the ride and they don't care. I haven't taken them back since because it is like, it's really like, you got to be a grown up to enjoy that. Right? It's a bunch of flower, you know, vendors showing off their wares. So, but you were asking about that. You were surprised that the Camden Aquarium is so much bigger than the New England Aquarium. So I don't know if you know this, but the New England Aquarium, right? The big tank they have in the middle, the oceanic tank, that was the first of its kind. And the thing about being first, is that sometimes that means you're the worst.
Yeah.
Right? And I maybe worst is too extreme, but like we have learned a lot about how to make these gigantic fish tanks since the New England Aquarium was built. So some of these newer aquariums just have like the same thing, but it's got all those years and decades of improvements baked in. And so they've got this like giant fish tank where like sharks are swimming overhead. Like sharks are swimming. They've got a tunnel through it. So they swim over your head and like,
wow.
It's really cool. They have hippos, right? They've got a big hippo enclosure. So
very cool.
It is very cool. And the kids really like it. I remember when they were really little, they sort of thought it was like watching TV because there's like lights coming out of it.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, I'm just, you know, yeah. Screen time. So cool.
Very cool.
All right. So this month we're talking about historic homes. And this week we're talking about how to find the right buyer. So let's start with who typically buys historic homes. Is it investors, preservationists, or homeowners? What kind of homeowners?
I don't think it's investors. I would say no to that.
Yeah.
I think homeowners seeking charm are the number one group. Mm-hmm. Preservationists, it certainly depends on who they're preserving for. You know, if they're in the flipping business, I think that's a hard business to be in now with antiques or, you know, older homes, historic homes, because I think there are a lot of limitations, you know. Towns get involved. If it's built prior to 1925, they could tell you what you can do architecturally. Mm-hmm. And I think that puts a big constraint on investors and preservationists.
And a lot of preservationists are like nonprofits, right? And who have, you know, a nonprofit budget. And a lot of these historic homes are going to cost you like $1 to $2 million, right? You know, and so that might be like several years of your operating budget. And so it's just kind of out of reach for them. But you do see it sometimes, like if it's like a strategically located historical home or like a very special home where, I don't know, like George Washington slept or something like that. But,
or, you know, inside certain towns, they might have like the Lyman Estate where you know, Waltham or Pierce House in Lincoln.
Correct.
Or Golden Ball Tavern in Weston. I think there's certain, they take on a project and kind of, they tend not to have 10 different projects in a town. They focus in on something that they feel the town needs to keep.
Right. So yeah, homeowners seeking charm. And like, how do you attract that homeowner seeking charm?
Well, I think out of the gate, photographs of the detail of the home will draw homeowners in. I definitely think that's the case.
Yeah.
I think people see it and they come. If you show it, they will come.
Yeah.
I think you can reference in MLS listings or in your advertising old world charm and detail. craftsmanship, old world craftsmanship. I don't think until you get to the house, people can appreciate it fully.
Yeah, I think you're right. The top two things are the photos and the MLS description. And in both those, you have to make it abundantly clear, like, that this is a historic home. And with a lot of them, just the exterior shot is going to get you there, right? And some of them not. And with the nuances on photos for me is whenever our team arranges photos on MLS, we kind of do it as a walking tour, right? Imagine, correct, like, you walk in the front door, and then we're going to take you on the left, and then we're going to, like, walk you in a circle around the first floor and then up the stairs, et cetera. That is exceptionally important for these older homes because they a lot of times have a floor plan that's hard to understand.
Well, I think rooms are called different things in historic homes.
Yeah, they're called different things, but also—
You might have a parlor, a living room, and a dining room, and no family room.
Right.
But there could be a family room, but it could be renamed.
Correct. But being able to help people, like, spatially understand how the house is laid out is critically important on these old world houses because they're not a layout that most people spend a lot of time in, right?
Right.
They're not open concept. And I think thinking that right on the photos is super important. And then I think in the MLS description, call out some of these elements of historic charm, right? You know, the dental molding, right? Like, say that.
Or a fireplace, you know, 7 fireplaces with, correct, beautiful molding. I mean, mantles that,
yeah,
show off
carved
the molding.
Carved mantles, right? Like, yeah, what are the mantles made out of? What's the style of the carving, right? Just say that kind of stuff. Because, right, the person that's, again, I think we've talked about how the person that's excited about these homes, a non-trivial reason is that they want to, like, know stuff about their home. They want to be able to share stuff about their home. And if you help them get there, like, and help them create those conversation pieces or highlight stories that they can tell, that's, like, activating the part of their brain that wants to buy a historic home.
Well, and I think historic homes lend themselves to storytelling.
Yes, they do.
And you oftentimes get a family history. You get, like, multi-generational, yeah, people who have lived there. And I had a historic home where the grandson came back, said he started talking about having dinners in, yeah, the formal dining room. And,
yeah,
this was this year, and he was 80-something years old. So,
yeah,
I think that it oftentimes town books that are put out talk about the historic happenings of different homes in their town.
Yeah.
You know, it was the old Sears estate,
right,
you know? And so I think there's a lot of information out there if you do the research to find out about the history of these older landmark homes.
Yeah, and ask the homeowner too, because I had somebody once, they wanted to sell a home there. Their father had passed away, and he was one of the leading experts on Asian politics at Harvard, right? At the Harvard Kennedy School. And, like, there are bedrooms in the home where ambassadors and prime ministers had stayed, right?
Right.
And you're like, you know, my first question was, like, which ones? Because you,
yeah,
should advertise that, right?
Yeah.
If the president of South Korea slept in a bedroom, like,
yeah,
that's important. Cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back to a question from the audience.
Did you know that Taylor and I aren't just your favorite real estate podcast hosts? We're also pretty darn good at our day jobs. With over 30 years experience and $1 billion sold in Greater Boston, we're real estate agents you can trust. If you're buying or selling a home, reach out to us at contact@yatesboston.com today.
All right. As a real estate agent, would you recommend buying historic homes to your clients?
So I pride myself on knowing my clients well, and the answer to that question is it depends on my clients.
Yeah.
It takes a certain personality to do it. And not everybody has the stamina to get through historically changing or preserving a home.
Yeah.
So I think from a realtor point of view, it's just knowing your clients,
mm-hmm,
and being able to look at them and look at the project and see if they can merge.
There are some times when I just have, like, a very clear point of view on what my clients should do, and I share that with them. Most of the time, though, I'm just highlighting trade-offs. I say, hey, like historic homes come with all this charm. It's really beautiful, lots of conversation, talking points, but they also come with a lot of work that don't come with a newer home. Is that worth it to you, right? And for some people, the answer is yes. And for some people, the answer is absolutely not.
Which is fine because some people don't have the time. They don't have the money.
That's right.
They have the passion and the ambition. But if you don't have the other two, it's hard to do because someone's got to manage it. Right. It is a managed project, exactly. Always.
Well, thanks for the awesome question. If you're a curious cat and would like your question to be considered, you can just send us an email at contact@yeatsboston.com or slide into our DMs at Yeats Team Boston. That's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week wherever you find your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, be sure to like, subscribe, and give us that 5-star review. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Yeats Team Boston or on the web at yeatsboston.com.